General Russell Honoré, the hero of Katrina, who's here to talk about a few things, but we wanted to start with the conflict in North Korea. That story was front and center last week, and then it was overshadowed by the events in Charlottesville over the last few days. But General Honoré, it remains the hot spot in the world, and how concerned are you about any possible conflict with North Korea and the United States?
Well, very concerned enough to keep an eye on it as far as being aware as a citizen. I spent 3 years of my life in Korea as a commander, first as a company commander, then as a commander of a 2nd Infantry Division with 20,000 troops along the DMZ in Korea. I did that for 2 years in the early 2000s. So very familiar with the threat there and the potential for this to emerge quickly into a shooting war, which really drove a lot of my concern to speak out about making sure that every effort was taken to tone down the rhetoric and focus more on what our objectives are, which is the deterrence of North Korea getting a proliferation of nuclear weapons. We know they have at least a dozen warheads at this time. And to make sure North Korea understands this is a war they cannot win. We're a nation of 315 million people that we know about. South Korea population is twice as their population. Alone, they've got about little over 300 aircraft. We have over 13,000. They have a dozen nuclear warheads. We have over 8,000. They will lose this war. We need to make that very clear to them, their leadership. So all the threats and bravado over the years, we've used what some people call strategic patience, hoping they wouldn't get the nuclear capacity. And now that they have it, we must make very clear this is a war they'll lose.
877-217-5757 for General Russell Honoré. Prior to his appointment as Commander, 1st United States Army, General Honoré served in a variety of command and staff positions in Germany and in South Korea, so he has some expertise about this part of the world. And as we know, he was very active close to home 12 years ago, and we'll talk with him about Katrina as well. But if you'd like to join the conversation again, 877-217-5757. I note, General, that you spent some time in South Korea. That region is certainly one that has caused us grief before. We went to war in the 1950s over Korea. What is it like now?
Well, it continues to be an area of great tension. Our troops there, the motto is fight tonight, which means we've got to be prepared to fight tonight. It's no, when you go to bed at night, you got to make sure your tank is full of fuel. You know where your weapon is and it's operational. Because the reason you're in Korea is to be prepared to fight tonight. We must be prepared for the no warning scenario. There are two scenarios we work when we talk about the Army looking at Korea. One of them is where we will get a gradual warning, an escalation, tensions between North and South Korea, or unintentional shooting might occur that creates some type of tension. That's what we call a warning. Then a no-warning scenario where they just start shooting. And that is the one that we have to be prepared for, the no-warning scenario. That's why we're forward deployed with our artillery and our infantry brigade as we speak now in South Korea.
President Trump said South Korea would be met with fire and fury. Was that a good move by the president? Or
I don't know. I've never heard a president speak that way before. And it would be good if it was tied to some strategy, and I'm not quite sure it is. But I was in South Korea when President Bush used the word actions of evil, and I was commanding the 2nd Division. It created as much tension in South Korea as it did, more tension in South Korea because more people knew about it. Regardless of what he said, the people in North Korea don't hear what he's saying.
All right. The president has a lot of generals around him, including one, John Kelly, who is his chief of staff. Mm-hmm. Does this allay any concerns you may have, or is the president out there freelancing on his own? How do you see it?
Well, I'm glad to see the generals are around him. And after those statements, the press work as it is, there's a lot of clarification of what those statements meant and what they mean. And there's a lot of clarification that they were either an off-the-cuff comment or a joke or, in this case, there are a lot of people and a lot of meaning that we thought it might have been effective. I don't know. We will see. But we've been dealing with this issue with South Korea with North Korea for nearly 60 years now. And they have a objective to achieve nuclear capacity. And I do think it's time for the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians to use their influence. And any help we might get from the Iranians will be doubtful. But with the Russians and the Chinese, at the end of the day, Jim, China does not want if we get a unification of the Korean Peninsula, it's been stated more than once, the Chinese do not want a Western-friendly country on their southern flank.
All right, hold tight. We do have some people who want to talk with the general, and there is an ample opportunity for you to get in if you'd like, 877-217-5757. James in Plaquemine. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with General Russell Honore.
Good morning, General Russell. I just got two quick points I want to make. First of all, we got Bannon, Trump right-hand man, say there is no option with North Korea, and we need to get used to them being a nuclear power. So, all right, that right there is just a contradiction with what Donald Trump said. And then I also want to ask you this, General. What is the morale like for the tens of thousands of minority military soldiers in the military with Donald Trump not want to denounce the extreme hate groups? Thank you.
All right. General?
Well, I think the troops, their position has been clearly indicated by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staffs and the chairman and the chief of all services, re-amplifying that the services are detest any type of racist or neo-Nazis or KKK, and that we are the services are for equal opportunity and equal treatment of people. So that statement has been made. And on any given day, most of our soldiers are more interested in what the first sergeant saying than what the president of the United States says.
What is your read on Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea?
I'm very unstable. And he's ruthless. He's been trained by his father and his grandfather to be a dictator. And you either get along with him or he take you out back and shoot you. It's just that simple. And that is the downfall of these dictators. And they all come and go. But we've gone through three generations of this family. And hoping that one day we'd wake up and we would hear that the North Korean government is imploded and the people are all trying to come south in South Korea. And that hadn't happened yet because the scenario, we always believe that this is the end. It won't last long. But that government, the reason the army is so big, not so much to fight the South Korean, but to control the people of North Korea.
Dan, downtown. Dan, you're on the air with General Russell Honore.
Morning, General.
Morning.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you knew General Flynn and if you had any reason to question his honesty and integrity.
I have a lot of reason to question his honesty and integrity, yes. I never worked with him, or he never worked for me. If he had, he probably would have never made it to the White House. What I do know about him.
What do you know about him?
Well, I know for one thing, as a DIE director, and you leave the Army, the Department of Defense is very, very deliberate. I've got the book right next to my desk. If you're going to do some work with a foreign government, you must be prepared to give up your retirement check, because you cannot take your retirement check and work directly for a foreign government. It is very clear. They tell you that about 8 or 9 times. And as a DIA director, you should have known that. Same thing with the issue what he did with Turkey. Again, all this will come out later on. I wish him no ill. I hope it was bad judgment, but he got to retire with 3 stars after being fired, and that didn't make sense either. So, because he was fired from his last job. He's got a lot of hell to go through, and I hope him and his family the best, because he did have good years of service.
Are we at a pivot point right now with this presidency, General Honoré?
You know, reflecting on that a little bit, I watched a little bit of that babbling news conference the other day, and I think even the president's most staunchest supporters were a little shaken by the what appeared to be some very amateur type of comments he was making, and it gave rise to the question, reflecting back on the days I was a company commander in South Korea and was hearing what was going on with the Nixon administration. And one morning, they called the battalion to formation, and it was announced that the President of the United States had resigned. Because every soldier, sailor, airman, Marine, and Coast Guardman, swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders appointed over him. Everyone is sworn to that. So when we see our president babbling like that, we can all have a bad moment, but it gave pause to what the hell's going on up there. The good news is that our system works in terms that we've got the branches of government, and they're at work, and hopefully that was an isolated moment. And as we continue to move down the road, that there'll be people that'll continue to get closer to the president, and he will stop this barroom talk and get back to leading the nation, because this is not creating jobs. The stock market's going down. It's not uniting the people. It's dividing the people. And we want to see any president succeed, but basically this disruptive nature that he's taken this week is giving great pause to a lot of people who wonder what the hell's going on in the White House.
For those who didn't hear it, here's a sampling of the president's remarks on Tuesday, which created a firestorm across the country.
You had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in the other group too.
All right, the president did not serve in the military, and he is a year older than you, General Honoré, and of course, 2 other U.S. presidents also did not serve in Vietnam, but. The president, this one, has no member of his family who's ever served in the military, to the knowledge of people who have covered him. This Nazi affinity that these people had in Charlottesville, that in and of itself would be enough that most anybody would denounce the group that was participating. Have we forgotten World War II?
Well, you know, we have to rip pretty quick. A lot of people don't remember Katrina. And it's hurricane season, and they need to prepare. How easily we forget. That being said, some of the very, very offensive language that was used during that demonstration that was repeated over and over, comments about the Jewish people, about his own family. I thought he would be totally offensive to that and speak to that and speak to the nation in a healing language. It would appear that somebody got the president's ear. It's like a guy go into the bar and you listen to all these conversations, then the next day this stuff come out in his head. And I don't think he's a man that drinks a lot, but somebody is feeding a lot of bad information, particularly this old war story about Pershing and the pig's blood on the bullet. That was declared BS a long time ago. So somebody is not doing their job up there in the White House if he's allowed to do their job, and he discussed this with him before you go out and say it. But he's listening to, like, what we call war stories and bar bullshit, bringing it forward inside the press to the American people.
Now, the president is getting some criticism from Republicans, but none in Louisiana to this point. When does that happen? When does our congressional delegation join the likes of Bob Corker in Tennessee?
Well, our congressional delegations, and I know all of them, they've continued to play lapdog to the president. You know, you can see their struggle to try to defend the Repeal and Replace Act. Even offered an alternative. But they cannot tell this president no for whatever reason. And I think the people of Louisiana expect more than that from them. You know, we're the second largest energy producer, the second poorest state, and we are being trampled by the multinational corporation, some of the stuff that President Trump spoke about. But they're going along with the program. They're not speaking up for Louisiana. They're speaking up for whatever this president say, they go along with the program. We have started to, as a people, need to remind them that they're working for us. They're not working for the president.
You said that, and I'm not sure your words are appreciated by many who probably should appreciate them, that we're the world's or the nation's largest energy producer, and we're the second poorest state. How does that happen, General Honoré?
Well, it started in our legislature here in Louisiana. Much of it had to do with the overtime, this objective to become energy independent. It happened during the oil embargo when we had problems getting oil out the Middle East. We gave exceptions to companies that they could import oil without paying tax. And now about 80% of the oil that one of our good citizens in the community, Exxon, they produce 80% of all they produce now, imported oil. At the same time, every day in Louisiana, we are now selling oil. It doesn't make sense that they don't pay tax on that oil that they import and they sell back to us here in the state of Louisiana and all over the country. And then over time, our senators created opportunities, Senator Breaux and Tozan, for all companies to drill in the Gulf, and they don't pay any of their debt back. They don't pay any royalties until their debt is paid off. That was a sweet deal. And, oh, by the way, none of that has affected the price of oil of gas at the pump. The other thing it's done to us and these industrial tax exemptions is basically denied our parishes the opportunity to tax those things. If Exxon go out and buy a $500,000 excavator, they don't pay tax on it, which denies East Baton Rouge Parish the opportunity to protect, to repair roads, to build new schools, to provide equipment for the police officers.
Ellen in Sherwood Forest. Ellen, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with General Honoré.
Good morning, and good morning, General Honoré. Thank you so much for your service. I'm a Louisiana taxpayer, and I'm listening to you telling us how Exxon, especially, and other corporations haven't paid their fair share of taxes all these years. What can we do about this now? How can we rectify this horrible inequality, in horrible situation?
Well, thank you for your calling in, and thanks for the question, because people who want to get involved, there's a very active organization in Baton Rouge. It's called Together Baton Rouge. They've had a big voice. Matter of fact, this year, they fought House Bill 44, I think it was called, and defeated it because the legislature created a bill that would have allowed parishes to individually cut deals with the oil and gas company, which meant in most parishes, particularly oil-producing parishes, most of those governments are work at the hand of big oil, because they're the ones that give them money to run for office. So right now, I would suggest you get involved with Together Baton Rouge, and we'll be coming back next year. I'm a member of it, with a bill, again, to try and eliminate what we call the industrial tax exemption and make it even more restrictive, because it's no way. Last year, the state of Louisiana, Governor John Bel Edwards, his first year in office, signed off on a $2 billion giveaway to South African Oil down in Mossville. After the state budget was approved, and the state ended up having a deficit, and he gave away $2 billion to this South African company. Right now, the city in the shadows of that plant, Sasol plant in Mossville and Westlake, Westlake just declared bankruptcy. They're in the shadows of a plant that the taxpayers of Louisiana gave $2 billion to. This does not make sense. And we need the citizens like you to become active, to start calling your legislators, because right now the legislators show up at the Capitol and they show no regard for the people. They go to work for the oil and gas companies.
Well, and I've seen it with my own eyes. You're sounding a lot like Foster Campbell, General Honoré, and that's what he used to say, that the Texaco flag should fly from the Capitol because they own it. Now, is that hyperbole, or do you really believe that corporate interests control the activity at the state capitol?
Let me put it this way. To quote a man that I know, and for years, we were trying to get a bill year before last, on the levies. And I walked up to him, and he was thinking about running from senator from North Baton Rouge area. He said, "Well, General, I've got to go. Well, I can't vote against the oil and gas people. They're going to give me money to run for senator." Notice there's nothing here about protecting constituents, about protecting our tax base and preventing pollution, or making them clean up the over 1,000 oil wells that's been abandoned in Louisiana, and hundreds of miles of excursion canals that allow salt water. It's not about protecting the people. It's about getting donations from the oil and gas company. They basically hijacked our democracy, and they overrun anything this governor tried to do. They override it because they own the majority party in the legislature.
A listener, Tracy, asks if you have reconsidered your decision not to run for public office. Will you ever run?
I don't think so. I think about it every now and then. I have a nap and I get back to work.
Well, what can you do as leader of the Green Army to stem the tide, if you say the justice is tilted in the other direction? It would seem that if you were an elected member of the legislature or the governor or U.S. senator, you would have a better shot of getting something accomplished.
Well, we did get four bills partially approved this year. That's better than we've ever done before. And we will continue to push legislation that try and make our state a more protective, a progressive state. You know, for the money, the natural resources that's taken out of this state, when only 4.6 million people, we should have the best roads, the best schools. Every kid should have two teachers. Every kid should take home an iPad. Nobody should pay for college. That's where we should be in this state. We should have kind of like that Alaska check coming in. But we've allowed these multinational corporations to steal our wealth and pollute our parishes. That's sad, and that's why we created the Green Army. And we need to change our government, because right now in the state of Louisiana, the citizens cannot bring forth a referendum to change the law. It only can be done through going through in a committee. And that must change if we're going to change Louisiana. As long as we have to get it through a committee, we will not get laws on the book that are progressive and move Louisiana forward. I mean, as much as people like Texas do a lot better at this than Louisiana. They got good roads and they got good schools. We hadn't figured that out.
As mentioned at the start of our program, the 12th anniversary of Katrina is coming in 11 days. That was an event that changed Louisiana and Rita, which followed. But you were on the front lines. 12 years later, what messages do you have regarding what happened then and the state's resilience since then?
Well, I think at the state level, you see the state responding well to the evacuation response and recovery of people during the floods. I think at the state level, they are well-oiled machine with the National Guard and GOSEP working together under the command of the governor. I'm very impressed with that. I'm starting to get concerned about complacency because FEMA still show in the Red Cross only about 20% of our people actually do any preparedness. So we would hope people would spend as much time preparing for hurricane season as they do football season, to use a metaphor here, and that September is National Preparedness Month. It's never too late to get prepared, and there are a lot of instruments out there, and if you go to www.generalhonoreyprep.com, you'll see an instrument there that will help you prepare, too. So there are a lot of things that will help you prepare. There's no reason not to prepare. But I'm worried, Jim, because people become complacent. I'm worried because when we evacuated for Gustav, a lot of people said they weren't going to do it again. And we evacuated for Irene, a lot of people said the same. It costs a lot of money to evacuate. And a part of your preparedness plan is to have some money put away in the event you have to evacuate.
All right, here's a question from Rebecca asking if you think President Trump will last his term. Will this is 30 weeks now. It's been an eventful 30 weeks. Can he make it 4 years?
Having been in pressure job, nothing similar to what the president, but at a different level with, you know, I don't see how his health will hold up. From looking at the stress he's put himself under, his veracity for wanting to tweet in the middle of the night, I don't see how his health will hold up. It's not healthy what he's doing. We've had many Army studies to see how many hours of sleep you should get a night when you're in these stress-induced positions. And I don't see how you can keep it up health-wise, it would be my assessment in looking at him and the pace he's running right now. I don't see how he could keep it up. And whether he make 4 years, I think it would be health-related that he will stress himself out because he doesn't let anything go.
Are you saying that some of his erratic moves may be related to sleep deprivation?
Oh, I bet you a fat man and three chunkies, that's what it is.
Really?
I bet you that, yeah. I've seen commanders overstress themselves in combat and in training, and this is a atypical behavior.
Well, there is a course of action if the president loses his faculties to remove him from office. Is that something that should be considered?
I think that's always considered with every president. We have to always be on the watch, whether it was Obama, Bush, or Clinton. You know, that guy carrying around a nuclear code is within arm reach of him. And everybody in the government got to do their job. If there's some people in the White House and the president started acting erratic, as our brother Nixon did. This is a democracy. It's not a king. He's not been ordained. He's been elected. And everybody's got to do their job. The president can get sick, too. And if he's not well, he's not ill, then the people around him need to do their job.
If you had 5 minutes with him, what would you tell him?
Calm down. You the boss. Everybody waiting for every word come out of your mouth. Calm down. And once it's written, you can never take it away. So calm down. Do about half of what you're doing, and the world will be a lot better. And let people around you bring you solutions as opposed to making them up on the mic. This is not a place to improvise. You're not in your boardroom. You're not talking to your executive assistants and your aide. You're talking to the world. The world's listening. And I hope his family will surround him with love and because we do not need that type of erratic behavior that close to the nuclear button.
General Honoré, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your remarks. Take care.